Welcome to the Coin Podcast Network.
You want to be able to do it all.
It's a lot of great energy.
Upbeat and going forward and excited.
Fun and juice, man. And we're going to get down to business.
From our studios in the Coin Tower in downtown Portland, Oregon, this is coverage of the National Football League you won't find anywhere else. This is Out of the Tunnel with AJ and Marcus on the Coin Podcast Network.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Out of the Tunnel with your host Marcus Greaves and AJ McCord. Another week in the NFL has wrapped up, and as always, we have a ton of stuff to talk about, so let's get to it. But before, we always have to ask, Miss AJ, how are you feeling today?
I am good. It is Thanksgiving week. I am excited. We're doing it real low-key, obviously, because COVID.
Yes.
But I'm not going to lie, man. I'm excited to have a day off and just watch a bunch of football. Maybe go out and explore a little bit in the morning, but It'll be good. It'll be nice to just chill.
Yeah, it'll be nice to have some time to relax. And right now, especially being sports broadcasters like we are, it's a little busy right now. Between we have college football, we have the NFL, we have college basketball popping up. The NBA is right around the corner. I mean, everything is kind of crammed in together right now. So we're pretty exhausted, but we're here doing it and I'm excited to do it. And so AJ, let's start off the podcast talking about, you know, COVID-19 around the league right now. I mean, it sounds like there have been some new guidelines that are released around the league. Basically that they have to, the teams and organizations have to follow. So can you fill us in on what those are?
Yeah. So as we've seen around the country, COVID continues to just storm through the U.S. And so the NFL on Monday issued some new guidance for the COVID protocols the league has to follow, including players who are not substituting or preparing to enter the field of play, not wearing their helmets, now have to wear a mask on the sidelines. Coaches can no longer only wear a face shield. They must also wear a mask. Rest in peace, Andy Reid's face shield epicness. Clubs are required to enforce the mask rules. They reduce the number of players who can travel to 62. Access to club facilities has been reduced. Pete Carroll joked on Tuesday that they now all of their meetings when they meet in person takes up like half of the field at the VMAC, which is the Seahawks practice facility in Renton. So it's pretty funny. But it's not been good, Marcus. Obviously, the Ravens-Steelers game is in question for Thanksgiving Day with a couple of Ravens testing positive. That was going to be – I mean, if there's a way for that to keep going, that's the game of the day.
Right.
But over the last two testing periods, the NFL has had a total of 108 positive tests. In the previous 11, they had 146.
Wow.
So – almost as many in the past two as the previous 11. So not great. The NFL trying to be, I guess, reactionary, but also proactive in keeping things where they're at. The NFL, like the rest of us, is trying to figure out. Pete Carroll talked on Tuesday about how critical it was for, you know, Seahawks have had no positive tests this entire time. But obviously with Thanksgiving, it's really hard to not be near your families and, but he has stressed to the players, you got to do it. And really for NFL players, similarly for you and I, not many things that I can compare myself to an NFL player for, but we're used to working on holidays, right?
Yeah.
Like I haven't seen my family on Thanksgiving in probably 4 or 5 years. So,
yeah.
It's really hard, but it's certainly not the end of the world. And keeping everyone safe and keeping our numbers down so that our frontline workers aren't overwhelmed is a top priority both for individuals and for the NFL players.
Absolutely. So it's going to be interesting to see how all of that is going to play out. Like you said, the NFL is trying to do everything that they can to tackle, you know, COVID-19 and make sure the spread does not get worse, which is why they kind of implemented these new rules and guidelines that not only players individually, but an organization as a whole has to follow. So, AJ, I'm just waiting And it sounds bad, but I'm just waiting for something, you know, like a big amount of players to get it, because that's kind of like, it seems like we're just waiting for that moment for, you know, wow, we got 50 people who, you know, tested positive. But it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I'm just nervous about it. I definitely.
Yeah.
Happen, so.
And I think that's the goal with these new protocols, is that even if one player on the team gets it, somehow you can manage to isolate it to a small number of people who've interacted with that player or with that team, you know, team personnel, whatever it is. So we'll see.
Yeah,
I think the Ravens and the Steelers are still scheduled to go on, though.
Let's hope. Let's hope. And as always, we'll keep you guys updated with that. You can follow us on Twitter. Me at @MarcusGreaves_, AJ_McCord. So with that being said, AJ, let's switch on over to the top headlines. And we're going to start off with my man, Joey B. Joe Burrow not only tears his ACL and MCL, I'm pretty sure he tore like two or three more things. And being a guy who's experienced that before, that is a long road to recovery. It's very frustrating. It's hard on you mentally and physically. You know, we're going to have to – best of wishes to them, but – or to him, excuse me. But the biggest thing is the Bengals did not – I don't think they really schemed that very well. I don't think they put everything that they could into an offensive line to protect their franchise quarterback. And you know that was going to happen. And, you know, I've talked to plenty of people who I know who whether have people on the team that they know or – around the team, and they're like, listen, man, everybody has the same feeling. If we don't make sure that we protect Joe Burrow, something bad is going to happen, because he's just a competitor, and when you're a competitor, you're going to do everything you can in order to win the game. So we've seen a handful of times this season my man is running for his life sometimes, trying to first down and make that extra big play for his team, and he takes some pretty big hits. He's been sacked a handful of times this season. AJ, it wasn't looking pretty, and then now obviously the result of that is he tearing his not just his ACL, but his entire knee up. And it's a long recovery, but, you know, obviously it's part of the game, and we hope that he makes a speedy recovery and comes back not just as good, but better.
Yeah, you talked about the sacks. So there's only been two games this entire season that Burrow wasn't sacked at all. Most of his games have been at least three sacks or more. He had two games where he was sacked 8 times and 7 times. That's a lot.
That's so brutal. Just and it's just thinking about, it's not like those sacks are like, you know, he's getting tripped up and he falls over. Like he's getting hit hard. And that's what I'm saying, is that you got to protect your quarterback, because eventually those, you know, 2 and 3 and 4 sack games are going to turn into injuries. And so you want to do everything you can to make sure he could stay as healthy as possible for as long as possible, especially if he's your $1 million quarterback. AJ, another guy, obviously, another big name quarterback in the rookie class was Tua Tagovailoa. And okay, I don't know if he got hurt. I don't know if he got benched because of his play. It sounds like it was kind of a mixture of maybe both from what I saw. But then we looked it up, you know, before we start recording. And now we're all over the place, AJ. I'm not really sure what the heck is going on with my man.
I know. I think so. It sounds like he got benched because of his play against the Broncos. So then Ryan Fitzpatrick goes in the game. After the game, Brian Flores said that Tagovailoa was not injured. He just believed that Fitzpatrick gave them the best chance to win at that point in the game. That said, Tua was on the injury report last week with a foot injury. Mm-hmm. So there's some questions. He had a few gnarly sacks that he had to eat as well. So it was a question of whether he got hurt or not. The Dolphins face the Jets this week. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say it doesn't matter who's starting. They should win that game. So if there is a lingering foot injury for Tua, this would be the week to get it under control and hand the reins back to Fitzmagic.
Absolutely. And AJ, a guy who continues just to be the most dominant rookie quarterback is Justin Herbert. And I saw a lot of things that people said, you know, how good is he going to be at the beginning of the season and everything like that. And again, I went on record, and I'm going to go on record again, saying I was not a huge fan at first. I thought that he was going to struggle. He proved me wrong. He proved everyone else wrong, which is okay, because, you know, you can't always be right in this. AJ, you're pointing to yourself right now, because yes, AJ, you were right. I'll give you that. But Not only is he one of the best quarterbacks in, or not only the best quarterback in the rookie class, but you could easily argue he might be a top 8 to 6 quarterback in the entire football league right now. I mean, he finished the game with against the Jets, 37-49, 366 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. I get it's the Jets. Regardless, those are some great numbers. I mean, this guy is doing everything for the Chargers, and they did get the win. That's big. They moved to 3-7 on the season, but you, it's just giving your guy more to work with in regards to look at what he has done with a team that's not very great right now. And whether it be with the coaching staff or just the players or whatever it is, regardless, the Chargers are not good right now, but you have to feel good if you're a Chargers fan because you have your franchise quarterback for at least the next few years because this guy is balling right now, AJ. It is unbelievable to see the throws he can make, the reads he can make, and just the confidence in the guy. It's super impressive.
Yeah, all 12 Chargers fans are really excited about their franchise's future. But it was nice to see Herbert get his second win since being in the league. He had a clean game for the most part, 3 touchdowns. He did have to have a few sacks as well. 3 sacks, 366 yards. Mentioned those 3 scores. But I talked to Justin after the game, and one of the things that he's been harping on while the Chargers have struggled so much, you know, he's lost something like 4 straight as their starter. Every single game, he said, we're not pointing fingers. We are not blaming each other. We have the ability to come together and to win the game. And you might say, it's the Jets. You should win the game. And not only should you win, you shouldn't be that close. But the point is, they managed to get it done despite it being close. And so that's something that Justin has said all since he started for the Chargers, is that we're not going to point fingers. We're going to come together. We're going to make it happen. You saw that happen for the Chargers. It's nice that Justin Herbert is the one who really benefits from that, because no one deserves to win more games as a rookie than Justin Herbert with the Los Angeles Chargers.
Yeah, and it was so crazy to think that people questioned his leadership. You know, saying he wasn't the loud guy in the room, so that means he's not a great leader. But even back before, when we would listen to him in college and when I played against him, he was just a guy that – you could definitely tell he was the leader of his team, and guys followed him. Guys wanted to get behind him. He didn't have to be the whole rah-rah, I'm going to scream in your face, you know, be the guy up in the camera all the time. Like, AJ, let's be honest, his post-game press conferences, it's not like he says anything too crazy, but he says it consistently because that's just who he is. That's how we think. Mm-hmm. Just listen. You know, we're not going to blame each other. We didn't come out on top. You know, there's things we need to prove and get back to the drawing board. That's what you want. You don't want a guy who's going to go out there and say, well, I'm throwing, you know, these amazing passes, and my wide receivers just can't catch them. My tight ends can't catch them. My offensive line just can't block for me. You know what I'm saying? If anything, he's going to take the blame and say he did something wrong. You know, he needs to be better for his team. That speaks a lot to who he is as a leader and as a player. Like I said, Chargers should feel good because that guy is going to be good for quite some time. AJ, this was probably my favorite moment over the weekend with all these games was the Titans versus Ravens. And I know it was an awesome photo finish with Derrick Henry winning the game in overtime, but I want to talk about before the game. This is where I got hyped because I love my favorite part about football, because when I played, I was a smack talker. And talking,
you're still a smack talker.
Just a little bit. It depends. Still a smack talker, but before the game, Titans and Ravens, Titans were on the Ravens logo in the middle of the field. And so as a football player, former football player, that's a sign of disrespect, guys, you know, kicking up the logo, you know, chanting on it, whatever it is that they do. And the Ravens saw it, Coach Harbaugh saw it, and he was not pleased with that. So, you know, players start going at it. But the most interesting thing was John Harbaugh, the head coach, he went over there and he started talking smack too. And it was Malcolm Butler. They exchanged words. I am not allowed to say those words on this podcast, but you can probably imagine what they said. AJ, have you ever seen a head coach and a player go at it like that before a game?
I'm trying to think of that. I don't think so. I mean, I feel like I've seen players and coaches on the same team go at each other, yeah. Like when things are going wrong or the coach wants to get more or whatever, you know, like there's been moments like that.
Yeah.
But I can't think of, especially before the game. I mean, I vividly remember, I obviously didn't play. I think I've told this story on this podcast before, but I vividly remember when after the Patriots beat the Chargers in Qualcomm Stadium, they went out to the logo and did Sean Merriman's lights out dance.
Oh, yeah.
And LaDainian Tomlinson, who's like one of the most low-key dudes, kindest souls you could ever meet, very soft-spoken, he lost it. I mean, he went out into midfield. Sean Merriman was out there. I think it was when Sean Phillips was on the team too. You just don't do that. You just don't go on another person's logo unless you're trying to start something. But then Mike Vrabel ended up coming out. So it ended up being this big, like, oh, we're both going to stand up for our players.
Yeah.
There we are.
I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. If Mike Vrabel came out, I'm probably not wanting to go against him. I'd probably rather go up against one of his players because that dude's still a beast. But Titans beat the Ravens in overtime. What a game that was. Derrick Henry continues to be a freak. But, AJ, the game that we know our man over in the Coin studio, Mr. Adam Bjornsson, is ripping his hair out for was the Chiefs and the Raiders. Because I know there's a little smack talk before that game as well, not on the logo or anything like the Titans game, but before in the media, how the guys were tweeting at each other, talking to the media about, you know, well, this is the way we do it for the Chiefs compared to this is what they do and everything like that. So there was just so much that was going on with that, but that was a great game. I thought Derek Carr played so well, but there's just something to be said when the other team, just like Russell Wilson, when the other team has a player like Patrick Mahomes. And so we've always said it, Russell Wilson is the MVP, but it gets harder and harder as weeks go on when the Seahawks lose and the Chiefs win to be like, you know, you just see what Patrick Mahomes does. I mean, it took him, I think it was 45 seconds to go 75 yards down the field and get a game-winning touchdown. When it was clutch time, he looked so smooth. He was 6 of 7 on that last drive and just the confidence. And like, as a Raiders defender, you just look scared. They look scared, to be honest. They're like, man, we don't know what to do because we can't get to him. If we rush him, he's going to find a way to break free and make a crazy pass. Regardless, he's going to win the game. And you could tell that that's exactly how they felt.
And that's the thing with, I mean, to bring in this sort of MVP conversation, is not only have the Seahawks lost a few more games than the Chiefs have, but in those games, Russell Wilson had multiple interceptions.
Mm-hmm.
So the one game that the Chiefs have lost was to the Raiders, which is what made this game so exciting because the Raiders were like, we want to prove that that wasn't a fluke.
Yeah.
Well, but I think that that's like Patrick Mahomes was flawless.
Yeah.
Flawless in that last drive. He did have one interception in the game, but that last drive is when MVP conversation begins to cement itself. Is what do you do when your team needs you the absolute most? Patrick Mahomes steps up time and time and time again. I don't think that we can hand out the MVP award at this point in the season, but if the season were to end today, I think Russell Wilson would get votes. Because I think it's absolutely bizarro that he has not gotten any MVP votes at all in his career, but I think you'd have to give it to Mahomes at this point. Now, Russ has plenty of time. Anything could happen. But at this point, if the season ended today and we had to get out the award, I think Patrick Mahomes is just – his resume is just too good.
Yeah, he has. It's too hard to bet against guys like that, which makes it that much harder because both those guys, I've said the same thing. It's too hard to bet against them. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see who is going to win the MVP. I don't know. I might have to go with Patrick Mahomes at this point, AJ. I know a lot of people listening will probably have disagreed and still stick with Russ, and that's okay. But speaking of Russ, Seahawks took down the Arizona Cardinals 28-21 last week on Thursday. What a game. I thought the defense stepped up well. We're going to break that down. But more importantly, we're going to talk about who the Seahawks get back from injury. Holy cow, it seems like that's what's been the name of the game this entire season is injury. So we're going to break all that down for you guys. But first, let's take a quick break.
Coming soon on the Coin Podcast Network.
There's one story that haunts me.
Ken Martin was 54 years old. And then there was Barbara Martin, who was 48. The oldest was Barbie, followed by Virginia, and then Susan, who was 10.
A father, mother, and three daughters have vanished.
The primary theory at the time was that it was an accident. Both girls had holes in their skulls.
When we find the car in the Columbia River, we will find the Martin family and we will solve this case.
Keep an ear out for that story coming soon and check out more great Coin Podcast Network presentations on coin.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to Out of the Tunnel with Marcus Greaves and myself, AJ McCord. We are looking at Seattle now. Ooh. After they got things back on track against the Cardinals. That really, Marcus, felt like a win or forget your playoff chances game for the Seahawks. I mean, I know it wasn't. I know that like that doesn't happen in week 10 or week 11, but it felt like it.
Mm-hmm. It just felt like if Seattle couldn't beat the Cardinals here, that it was kind of like a statement of, okay, maybe they're pretenders. You know, they're not playoff contenders, mm-hmm. they're pretenders. So it was pretty interesting to see that, you know, they stepped up, they answered the call, they took the challenge head on. And I thought the defense, that was impressive. That Arizona Cardinals offense is so fun to watch, just between Kyler Murray, DeAndre Hopkins, Larry Fitzgerald, Kenyon Drake. There's so many, Christian Kirk, there's so many playmakers and talented guys on that roster that it's like, if you hold them, in my opinion, anything under 28, I mean, that's impressive. And so to see that a Seattle team that has been historically bad this season was able to do that, so impressive. Hats off to them. I give them an A- grade. Not A+.
There you go. And that defense is something that Pete Carroll has been talking about all season, right? It's like, we're not at our full strength. We don't have the full pieces. We don't have everyone healthy. And so I asked him on Tuesday, I said, hey, was that really the first chance that you've had to see, you know, do you feel like something clicked with your defense in the last game and a half that was what you were talking about for the last 2 or 3 months, really? And here's what he had to say.
These last six quarters that we've played have been different. And the guys have really taken a step forward in owning what they're doing and the communications and the adjustments and utilizing the package and disguising really well and really feeling comfortable with it. And it's just taken us quite a while to get the continuity so we could talk like that.
So, Marcus, of course, there's a lot of new faces on the defense, but there's also a lot of healthier faces on the defense, including Jamal Adams. That game was such a breakout game for Carlos Dunlap. Oh, my gosh. If I could bring y'all to Lumen Field.
Oh, yeah.
When I was there on Thursday for this game, 2-minute drill, you would think that place was rocking because Dunlap was, like, hopping around, getting hyped, like, he told me afterwards that he was pretending like the 12s were in the game or in the stadium. And so that guy's energy, now that he also knows the system, all of a sudden you realize why Seattle has said, I promise we're really good on defense. We just haven't shown it yet. And of course, they didn't have Shaquille Griffin. They should get him back for the game against the Jets. But Marcus, looking at their schedule, well, first let's talk about the injuries, right? Because that's been a problem. So we talked a little bit about Jamal Adams. He's going to be healthy. Another couple of guys who practiced fully for the Seahawks on Tuesday, Chris Carson, even though he hasn't played, right, in a few weeks. And it's the first time in a month that he has done everything at the practice. So they're going to get Chris Carson back. They got Carlos Hyde back already. Then you have Ethan Posich, who obviously went out with concussion protocol at center. And so all of a sudden, Damian Lewis, who we love at Coin Six, he has an incredible story. His girlfriend's dad has an incredible story. So we know Damian very well, which means we also know he's never started a game at center.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Ever. Yeah. At any level. Oof. So
that's nerve-wracking.
Really good news. They're getting their starting center back. And then in addition to that, they're getting Shaquille Griffin back. Griff has been out for a while and the cornerbacks have been such a point of weakness. So Marcus, all those guys that I just ran through, how much better does that make this Seattle team than they have been in the last 3 or 4 weeks?
Right. And a good example is we finally saw what it was like when they got a running back that's been in the system, right? You look on the offensive side, you get Carlos Hyde back And he had 14 carries, 79 yards, and a touchdown. And not just an impact in the running game, but in the blocking as well. Just seeing what those guys can do. Guys who have been in the system, know the system, know the tendencies of their other teammates, because that's super big, saying, okay, so if I, you know, if I drop back in this zone, can this guy get over here quick enough? You know, I haven't played with this guy enough to understand, you know, if he can get over there fast enough or not, or whatever it is. You get those guys back on the defensive side of the ball. And now a healthy Seattle defense, again, I don't think it's going to make leaps and bounds to the point where it's going to jump from, you know, one of the worst to the absolute best in the NFL. But you'll definitely see a lot of improvements, and especially in the fact in the defensive backs room, and on top of that, on the defensive line. I mean, just seeing somebody make an impact is going to be huge for the Seattle defense, because I think throughout the season, there's been times where we've kind of seen it. Sometimes we're like, wow, that guy's, you know, that was a big play from this kid. And then other times you're like, holy cow, where is somebody? Does it even look like there's a defense out there? So to get comfortable and, you know, faces out there who have been there and know the system and know everybody's tendencies is going to be so big. And I think the Seattle defense will make us a significant jump, nothing to the point of where they'll be the best, but I think they'll take a significant jump and we'll be able to notice that.
And that's what they're going to need, right? And the good thing too is, so Pete Carroll took issue when I called it a massive break in the middle of the season, but really Seattle is getting basically a mini bye week this week, because they played on Thursday night last week and they don't play until Monday night against the Eagles. So that's, they absolutely rest. Have a massive break, and he can take issue with it, but that's huge to have a non-bye week break like that. And in addition to that, let's go over their schedule for the next 4 weeks. They've got the Eagles, very intimidating football team. They've got the Giants. They've got the Jets. Oh, and then they've got the Washington football team.
Yeah. Oh, boy. So what you're
that
saying
should
is
be 4-0.
Yeah. I was going to say, very easily can they go 4-0. And they should go 4-0.
Yep. They have to go 4-0. Because then after that, December 27th, home game against the Rams. And if they don't do their part over the next 4 weeks, the Rams schedule, I believe, it's significantly harder. And right now, those are the two atop the NFC West. And so the Rams schedule for the next 4 weeks before that post-Christmas meetup is San Francisco, Arizona, New England, and then also the Jets. So the Rams could easily go 2-2. I mean, the Patriots aren't really scaring anybody right now, but the Rams are going to win two games. They should beat San Francisco and they should beat the Jets. So if by some crazy circumstance the Rams manage to keep pace with the Seahawks, then it's all going to come down to that 27th, which is going to be wild. So the Seahawks have this big break right now, and then they go into a very easy stretch of football games. So the thing that I think they're going to have to rely on most, which you can speak to this more as a former player, is they have to continue to get up for these games. Mm-hmm. They cannot approach this as if, oh, it's the Eagles, they've only won two games. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's the Jets, they've won no games. Like, these are the games that you can't have those mental lapses. As someone who played, how critical is veteran leadership like Bobby Wagner, like Russell Wilson in games like this?
Well, it's going to be huge, because this is the time where, again, just like you said, sometimes it's hard to get up for games. I can speak to this as a college level of, imagine, you know, your Oregon State, you know, Power 5 team, and you're trying to get up and get excited to play, you know, a D1 AA school, which by no means do they lack talent, because there's plenty of talented guys all over the league that went to those kind of schools and smaller schools. But as a whole, when you're a young college kid, you're looking like, man, I get excited to get up and play the Ducks. I get excited to play USC, UCLA, those kind of schools, Washington. It's hard for me to get as excited when we're playing Weber State, Portland State, Washington State, which all those teams, I will say, have been close, if not beat Oregon State at some point. So that's why I'm saying, is because if you don't get up, you have to look at it. The Jets, the Giants, the Eagles, those teams are hungry. They want wins. Those guys are frustrated. They're throwing everything in the kitchen sink at teams like the Seahawks, where if you get a win there, you can ruin somebody's entire season, their whole mojo. And quite frankly, in some cases, you can save your season, right? So I think a lot of the times you need those guys like Bobby Wagner, Jamal Adams, those guys be like, listen, I don't want to hear nothing. I don't want anyone to be excited for, you know, the next week or the week after or whatever it is. We have to be focused on these guys this week. We have to come in and listen. We need to blow these guys out, as we should, because if we don't, I'm going to be upset as a leader. That's kind of the mentality I think they need to have. Mm-hmm. Because if not, that's where you don't want a game to stay close with a team who's hungry, because they'll always find ways to come out on top or at least make it a lot closer than you want it to be. That confidence thing is huge. Confidence is so big in football. And if you have your confidence as a team, like the Seahawks do right now after that win over Seattle, then you can do whatever you want. But if you lose to a team like the Jets, the Eagles, or the Giants, that's going to take a massive blow to your confidence. And then you're going to kind of get confused of who you are as a team and your identity. So I think it's super important. Now is the time, if you're a leader, to always, always, always be on your players' heads and keep them focused, keep them on top of their game, because any team can beat anybody in the NFL. We've seen that before.
Yeah, and that's something Bobby Wagner talked about. I think it was right before the Arizona game, and he said, it comes down to pride. We have to have pride in how we play defense. And whatever he said in the week leading up to the Arizona game, it worked. So these are classic trap games. Seattle needs to come out. Like you said, they can't let them hang around, because that's when mistakes start to happen. That's when Seattle's panic level starts to rise a little bit, right? Because if you're down a score to the Jets midway through the fourth quarter, you're like, oh my gosh, how are we down a score to the Jets? And you start to make those decisions that we've seen Russell Wilson make, where he has those multiple interception games. So you want to make this as easy as possible on your quarterback. So the defense needs to build on what they did against the Cardinals and punish every single team from here on out. Of course, that's not very nice to talk about on Thanksgiving week. We should be talking about kind things. So That's what we're going to talk about before we let you all go enjoy some turkey that I'm sure you're going to be eating after this safely with your household. But we talked every single week about some of the cool things that NFL players are doing to give back to their community. Here in the Pacific Northwest and really around the league, Marshawn Lynch is a fan favorite. He handed out 200 turkeys.
Ooh.
In Hawaii.
Marshawn.
Ask me why he's in Hawaii.
Yeah, I was going to say, what is Marshawn Lynch always does these kind of things, though.
I know.
I love Marshawn Lynch's just how he carries himself, right? Everyone, I think when you see him at first, he's he's for sure an intimidating person. When you just see him, and then you listen to him talk, and you listen to the way he talks to, you know, whether it be fans or even sometimes other players. I mean, he's such a nice guy, unless he says, you know, like he wants to run through your face as a running back. But, you know, just seeing guys like him who don't play in the league anymore and they still want to make an impact on the community and still try and do it as much as they can, you know, hats off to him. That's such an awesome thing, especially in the time right now that we are all in, where nothing is really guaranteed right now, you know, whether that be a Thanksgiving meal or just, you know, spending time with your family or being able to be around your loved ones. I mean, seeing somebody like him go out and do something like that for everybody, it means a lot and it's really big.
Yeah, and I think it's really cool how each of the players are sort of taking ownership of like just different areas of their community, right? So Marshawn is a Hawaiian resident, but an Oahu resident, but he, when COVID first began, he was handing out masks in Oakland. And then Aaron Rodgers teamed up with Postmates in Green Bay to make sure that people were fed in Green Bay. And so he and Jerry Rice both gave back to their communities in Green Bay and in San Francisco, obviously, respectfully. So Rodgers made a Postmates delivery to the staff and patients at St. Vincent's Children's Hospital in Green Bay. And then he also gave, oh yeah, here it is. He also made a donation to Paul's Pantry to go towards their Thanksgiving meal distribution for 1,400 plus families, as well as sending swag to the volunteers. So I think this is a really good reminder that what these NFL players are doing is so big, right? Like 200 turkeys for Marshawn Lynch, partnering with Postmates for Aaron Rodgers. It is so big. But one of the things that I am challenging myself this week is do that in my circle. Like, what does that look like on my scale? Maybe that means buying somebody a coffee in line behind me at the drive-thru. Maybe that means seeing somebody struggling with their groceries and helping carry it. It's just these small things. And I saw Myers Leonard tweet, former Blazer, tweet out this a few days ago, and it was such a good reminder for this week. It costs nothing to be kind.
Exactly.
So no matter how much you have or how much you don't, try to be kind this week. It is hard to be away from your families at the holidays. It is hard to deal with everything that we're going through as a country, as a world right now. So stay positive, stay kind, and try to impact your circle this week.
Absolutely. Well, that is all that we have for you guys. Wow, that was a nice little ending. I enjoyed that. That's all we have for you guys on this episode of Out of the Tunnel. Not only go enjoy your Thanksgiving, but stay safe and stay healthy. As always, wear your mask and social distance. You can find me and AJ on all of our social media. You can find me at @MarcusGreaves_. You can find AJ at @AJ_McCord. Thank you guys so much for listening to another episode of Out of the Tunnel. We'll talk to you guys next week. Whoop, whoop.
Thank you for listening to the Coin Podcast Network. You can listen to more great Coin podcasts on coin.com/podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Please listen, download, subscribe, and review.